I'm Ira Plato. This is Science Friday from NPR, coming to you from St. Louis. And up next, we want you to think green, and not because it's St. Patrick's Day next week. We want you to think about green building and design. And here in the Show Me State of Missouri, they're doing more than showing and talking. They're showing how green buildings, talking about how they can be done. And Washington University in St. Louis has built one of the greenest buildings in the country at their field station, just right outside of town. It's the Tyson Living Learning Center. It's powered by solar panels. It gets its water by collecting rain. It has a composting toilet system that recycles waste into fertilizer, and fertilizer that gets used in gardens right there on the site. And I've seen these things, and they have absolutely no odor to these. It's just unbelievable to see how they work and how well they work. And the building was built according to the guidelines of the Living Building Challenge. That's the most stringent set of green building guidelines there is. And joining me now to talk more about it is the architect for the Tyson Living Learning Center. Dan Helmuth is the principal and co-founder of the Helmuth and Bickness Architects in Maplewood, Missouri. And thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And, of course, green building just doesn't have to be done by professional architects like Dan. Along also with him, we have someone who can talk about how you can retrofit your own home. If you want to make it more green, we'll be talking about greening up your existing space. Dan Chiris is president of Sustainable Systems Design, and he is founder and director of the Evergreen Institute Center for Renewable Energy and Green Building in Gerald, Missouri. He's also the author of 29 books on green building and remodeling. Thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure.
What, Dan, what defines a green building? Well, how do you know it's green?
Well, there's a they could speak for a couple hours on that one, but
give me 5 seconds.
Okay, the lead green building rating system is put out by the U.S. Green Building Council. We have a very big chapter here in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. It defines what a green building is by certain ratings.
So it's more than just putting solar panels up on your roof.
It's a combination of approaches. It has to do with site, it has to do with energy, it has to do with materials, it has to do with how you process stormwater. It can have even a social equity aspect to it. And I think that's what makes it so interesting, is that it encompasses all the things we're all trying to grapple with, how to minimize our impact on the ecology when we build things.
Mm-hmm. And Dan Helmuth, I mentioned the Tyson Living Learning Center. Is that open to everybody to go take a look at it?
Tyson is a gated campus. It's about 2,000 acres run by Washington University. They do have an open house on Fridays during the summer, and you can arrange tours sometimes by calling up. They've had quite a bit of people coming out there, so it can get to be a little issue because they're all doing a lot of their research and work out there at the same time.
Dan Chiris, can you turn your own home into a very green building?
Oh, absolutely. The potential's enormous. You know,
where would you start first? What do you attack for
the first very thing? First thing you should do is get an energy audit. You know, either do your own audit or hire someone to do an energy audit. And they'll come in and help you figure out where the leaks are in your building envelope, you know, the walls and ceilings and whatnot. They'll recommend insulation. They'll recommend other measures. But start with an energy audit. Then step number two is seal up the leaks in the building envelope, in the walls, the foundation. Our houses are like Swiss cheese. You know, if you add up all those little tiny leaks in the building envelope, it'd be equivalent to a 3-foot by 3-foot window open 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. So start there. You know, that's the most economical thing you can do.
You know, you often hear that energy conservation is the easiest big chunk, the low-hanging fruit to take out of the energy picture, and that's what you're saying.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So what number two, what would you do? After you get that energy audit and you've done your conservation, what would you do next?
Yeah, once you've done your then you turn to insulation. Most of our houses are woefully under-insulated. You know, you go into some of these old houses, they've got 2 inches of insulation in the ceilings. So that's the other thing. Bundle it up. You know, add a good thick layer of insulation in the ceiling, and if you can, in the walls. Mm. And if you're over a crawl space, if your house is built over a crawl space, insulate under the floor.
Interesting. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. If you have a question here in the audience, you want to step up to the microphone and ask about green buildings, you can do that. And one interesting thing, Dan Helmuth, about the Living Building Challenge, and I find this hard to actually do in practical terms, is there's a rule to try to find everything within a local community, right? All your ingredients for the building have to try to come from the local area within a certain radius.
Yes.
Right? I haven't found a light bulb yet that doesn't come from China.
Well, it was we couldn't find ceiling fans that weren't. The last ceiling fan made in the U.S. was made in July 2009.
Is that right?
And so when we couldn't find stuff that was locally available, we used a lot of salvage materials. So we went out with Neil Schaefer, one of the project managers from WashU, and we scavenged around. We got some used wood doors from the City Museum. And so we had a lot of fun doing things like that. For instance, we have a beautiful rain chain. It's actually a rain flower that we use to divert water into a rain barrel. And all the rain chains are made in Taiwan or India, which is great, but that didn't meet the requirements. So we had an artist make it out of aluminum. He actually made a rain flower chain. And it's a small thing, but it's a really beautiful thing. It's a fun way for architects to work. We don't get a chance to do some of these things that often.
You know, with the unemployment the way it is, and we're talking about losing jobs overseas, mm-hmm. you would think that, and this would be a great industry, all these building materials industry in this country.
Well, we're losing our ability to make things, and I think everyone's waking up to that, you know, the whole idea of being able to raise our own food, make our own things. I think we're all getting interested in that, figuring out how to make that economical again. I mm-hmm. think there's a sea change.
What made you decide, or the builders, to decide to build this structure? Is this a demonstration project,
educational project? It's a big experiment, and that's what I think Washington University deserves a tremendous amount of credit for going through all the pain and agony that we went through. But in initial, we did a design charrette, which is a brainstorming mm-hmm. meeting up front. And the people working there, Kevin Smith and John Chase, the director, and everybody involved with it, they're all biologists, environmental scientists. And when we talked about the Living Building Challenge, that's about the ecology of buildings. So they instantly liked the idea of it. And it was a relatively small building, a little bit off the grid. We weren't on a sewer system. We were on a well system. So we had the ability to experiment a little bit that would have been a little bit more difficult in an urban environment. So.
All right. Let's go to a question in the audience. Yes, sir.
Speaking of urban environments, one of the big things that I see like in everyday life right now is trying to leave like people with renting properties so they're not actually the homeowners. So how would we like, are there programs out there for people who are renters who own the properties who are actually going out and having the renters actually go ahead and
because
try to make
them
more green?
Your landlord or the owner is not going to want to install that stuff, right?
Right.
Yeah, how do you talk them into it? Is there a credit or some sort of, you know?
That's a real tough one because you pay the utility bill, and they'd have to pay for the energy upgrades. Well, there have been times where I rented. I actually just paid for them myself because I knew they'd pay off. I'm not aware. There's a home energy weatherization program in the United States for low-income families right now. There's millions and millions of dollars available for that. You might be able to talk a landlord into investing in some of these energy efficiency measures. It's a real tough one, though, I have to admit.
Any of the new stimulus money going to energy efficiency?
Well, lots of it. That's what I was saying. That's where that money came from the new stimulus money. There's a lot of money, too, going into training people to do energy retrofits, to do solar, and so lots and millions of dollars going into training people, training trainers to train people, training people to start in this industry.
And if you want to retrofit your home, you might be able to save some tax money or get some rebates on.
Yeah, and a lot of things that you invest in as a homeowner,
right,
receive tax credits for that, for energy efficient windows and energy efficient water heaters and that sort of thing. So yeah, there's a lot of money available for this.
Yes, sir.
I have a friend that's just started in the energy auditing business, mm-hmm. and what role are realtors and banks playing? And I know there's some kind of energy efficiency mortgage thing that's possible. What roles, from a business standpoint, what other things can they do?
From what standpoint can the banks, banks and realtors haven't really been leaders in this field, quite honestly. Most of it's been driven by energy auditors and homeowners themselves. So, and there is an energy efficiency mortgage that's available. And what that means is if you buy an energy efficient home, they'll give you a little bit larger mortgage, which is maybe
they won't
good.
Give you a better rate.
No, not necessarily. So, which is what
that's
I'd really
what we
prefer.
Really need. We need a better rate. You
yeah,
know?
Precisely.
If you can get a tax credit or something for subsidizing a windmill, a wind turbine, why can't we do that?
Well, and the thing to remember that I find real intriguing is that it actually costs more to build a cheaper home. You know, when we think about a home, we're always thinking the price tag of the home, that translates into a mortgage, that becomes a mortgage. But the cost of a home is more than just the mortgage. It's mm-hmm. the mortgage plus repair bills, plus maintenance, plus replacement and energy. So actually, you don't necessarily have to wait for the banks to do it for you. By building a more energy efficient home up front, you're actually going to have a slightly larger mortgage, but a much, much smaller energy bill. So your monthly outlay is going to be less than it would be if you bought a cheaper, less energy efficient home. So it costs more to build a cheaper home.
I get you. Let's go to this gentleman here at the mic.
Hi, thank you. I've seen a lot of green certified commercial buildings, but I think Dan spoke earlier about social equity. Mm-hmm. I understand that Habitat for Humanity has done a whole bunch of LEED Platinum buildings, LEED Platinum homes in St. Louis. Can you speak a little bit about green building and affordable housing, please?
Well, I mean, I think that's it's what it really comes down to, because if we're not greening our whole building stock, we're not really addressing everything that we're doing. So I think being able to, what Washington University's done on a very high end as an experiment is one thing, and it's very important, but I think it's also important to be able to do economically efficient green building and to figure out how to make that work. I think that's probably one of the biggest areas, and it is a challenge. LEED addresses it. For LEED for neighborhood development, actually has some social equity credits as part of that. So that brings up that discussion when a developer is doing a larger development in a community. If they're using LEED for neighborhood development, social equity is actually part of that discussion. You can get credits for it.
You can.
Yes. And I think, and also as brownfields redevelopment is part of that also.
Do you have to apply for that, or is it?
No, it's just you have to have a certain number of low income units in your building. You can't just have all luxury apartments, for instance, enabled to get that credit. So, mm-hmm.
So people are thinking about it then. Sure.
Definitely.
Yeah. And if I could add, I mean, there's an awful lot of affordable green building, you know, housing for low-income folks, and because community development organizations oftentimes build those structures and they pay the utility bills. So there's an impetus for them to build very energy-efficient buildings. And Habitat for Humanity learned early on that it was a real mistake to build cheap houses for people, and that's what they were doing. They were building relatively inexpensive homes, but the utility bills were killing the occupants.
Yeah.
So now they've wisened up a fair amount, and they're building, spending a little bit more to build these super energy efficient homes, and the occupants now have a really low mortgage, monthly mortgage, if you could call it that, plus really low energy bills.
And that's what counts.
Yeah.
We're talking about green buildings this hour on Science Friday from NPR. I'm Ira Flato here at the St. Louis Science Center. And joining us now is Flora Lichtman, our video producer. Hi, Flora.
Hi, Ira.
And she has our video pick of the week this week, which you can see up there on sciencefriday.com. And you sort of hung around at the Green Building.
We went to the Living Learning Center. Senior producer Annette Heist and I checked it out, and Dan gave us a tour. And, you know, we zoomed in on the part that interested me the most, which was the compost toilet.
She's a brave woman.
Yeah, this is what Dan said before the show. He said, I can't believe you put those images up on the website. So it really is. It is uncensored.
But you were pleasantly surprised by the compost toilet, right?
No, it was amazing. I mean, and I heard, you know, you said yesterday that the technology has been around for a long time.
It's very simple technology, and it takes a little bit of getting used to. But I think what's so interesting, looking at a living building, the whole idea of it actually eliminates the concept of waste. There are no waste products. Everything's being used or being converted. And I think that's a really interesting concept if we're going to figure out how to mitigate the effect of building on the environment.
You called it a constructed organism yesterday, and that really helped me understand what the living building challenge was about. And I think you can probably explain that concept.
Yeah, what does that mean, a
constructed? Well, I mean, as we get into more sustainable and green design, we're often dealing with living systems. For instance, green roofs are living systems. They have sedum growing, they have soil, they have microorganisms. And as architects, we have to work with landscape architects, with biologists, botanists. It's not just structural engineers. On a compost toilet, there's a scientist that's designed that. It takes a little bit different upkeep. Again, it's a living system, and I think we're getting more and more into this kind of arena. And it's a little more complicated, but it brings in a whole series of experts that really make it work.
And Flora, I'm guessing you got to see more than just the toilet while you were there, right?
Yeah, a few other things as well. One thing that was really amazing, too, is just what you do with stormwater and runoff. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was amazed that the drinking water comes from the sky.
And we were able to capture 100% of the drinking water for the building on the roof. It's a south-facing roof.
There's no yuck factor in this coming off the roof?
No, that's one of the least yuck factors, I think. But it does go through ultraviolet filtration, uh-huh. through a whole series of filters. And we worked very closely with St. Louis County. We had a little bit of fun getting approval on all those things, but they were very gracious and got it approved. And the water is tested, so if you ever come out there and have a drink, it's tested every month, just as the well water was
right.
before that. So.
And the building materials are?
The building material, most of the wood from the project comes from Tyson. John Chase is doing a forest restoration project where they were taking out eastern red cedar and hard maple, which were invasive native species. And so we asked the Living Building Challenge folks, could we use some of this wood that's coming out? And they said yes. And then we said, now how are we going to do that? And we found a guy named Scott Wonder that we went out with him, Travis Mormon, Kevin Smith, and I actually marked the trees. Scott cut the trees down, skidded them out, took them to his sawmill, made the pieces, made the siding, made the flooring.
Right there in the site.
And installed it. Now,
wow.
His sawmill was off-site.
Off-site.
But,
wow.
yeah,
and so, Flora, you had the full tour, got this all on video?
Yeah, we got this all on video, so you can go to the website and see it. And I think one of the other things that came up was just how many compromises, you know, these decisions aren't always that easy, yeah. right?
Because, as I say, you can't find a light bulb closer than China to it's made in America.
I think that's a wake-up for all of us. You know, things aren't made here anymore, and we need to start making things here again.
This would be a good industry.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Flora.
Thanks.
And you can see Flora's video pick of the week up on our website at sciencefriday.com. And we also have dozens of other videos up there that you can view. And also, we're looking for your videos. Send us some of your videos. And if you're a scientist and you're making stuff, we'll give them to Flora, and she'll turn them into gems. They may be great, but they'll be gems when Flora is done with them. Thank you. Well, thank you for joining us. Dan Chiris is president of Sustainable Systems Design. He is founder and director of the Evergreen Institute Center for Renewable Energy and Green Building in Gerald, Missouri. And Dan Helmuth is principal and co-founder of Helmuth and Bickness Architects in Maplewood, Missouri. Thank you for joining us today. Greg Smith composed our theme music, and we had help today from NPR librarian Kim Molesky. Thanks to Elizabeth McClure and Lisa Marucci at the St. Louis Science Center, Phil Donato, and the rest of the staff at St. Louis Public Radio. Thank you for being our hosts today. And thanks, everybody, for welcoming us into St. Louis. Next time I'm coming back in baseball season, because I want to see those Cardinals playing a game. We also want to remind you that we're going to have another video up on our website, because on Sunday is Pi Day. March 14th is Pi Day, and we had a great Pi Day. Flora made a great Pi Day video. It'll be up there. It's also Albert Einstein's birthday. So have a great weekend. We'll see you next week back in New York. I'm Ira Flatow in St. Louis.